Hi, and welcome back to Market Talk. My name is Jamie, and today I'm going to be talking about the Bank of England's independence, the rationale behind it, the political story, and also the aftermath of the independence that was granted in 1997. I hope you enjoy. Now, the Bank of England's independence is quite an interesting topic for many reasons. It came in the aftermath of what I would say was one of the biggest monetary policy crises of the UK in recent decades. But even going before that, having the Bank of England in the government's control was always a problem. Now, before the Bank of England was independent, the government had full discretion over monetary policy. For example, the Thatcher government could raise or decrease interest rates and had full discretion over the different policies. So they had both control over both fiscal policy, so that's government taxing and spending, but also monetary policy, so that's things like quantitative easing, the buying of government bonds on secondary markets, as well as raising or decreasing the bank rate. Now, this created a lot of issues because it was weaponized quite frequently for political campaigns. For example, a government a year or so before an election would typically deliberately cut interest rates in order to try and stimulate more growth, increase household disposable incomes as mortgages could be refinanced at lower rates, and therefore create this illusion of a boom, which therefore gets the government re-elected again. And this was problematic, of course, because even though in the short term potentially raising, or in this case cutting interest rates might be beneficial, in the long run, it could cause inflationary pressures, which is quite often what happened. So that was one drawback, quite a significant drawback, of having the Bank of England and, as a result, monetary policy in the control of the government. Now, this really came at a tipping point in 1992, where we saw the exchange rate mechanism crisis. So briefly, the ERM, or Black Wednesday, as it's come to known as today, was a crisis as the UK tried to join the euro and therefore had to lock in an exchange rate, or had to be within like an exchange rate band of the Deutsche Mark, which was the primary currency, in this case of Germany, at the time that was to form the basis of the new euro currency. Now, the problem was that the pound ultimately couldn't keep within that bandwidth and kept being on the cusp of falling out of the bandwidth, and ultimately was forced out of it by speculators such as George Soros, who massively shorted the pound and therefore caused the pound to depreciate. Now, this was a huge crisis, and I mean, there's a number of reasons why this didn't work. The UK, for example, had three times the inflation rate of Germany in 1989, much higher interest rates, and also much lower productivity than the likes of France and Germany. And therefore, this happenstance, this attempt to try and join the euro, was always going to be very difficult. But ultimately, the Bank of England, which was under the control of the major governments at the time, used monetary policy to try and stay within the mechanism. Ultimately, the pound kept depreciating, and ultimately, to try and raise the value of the pound, the Bank of England, controlled by the major government, continued to raise interest rates. Now, this, of course, makes it more attractive for foreign investors to buy government bonds because of the higher rate of return that comes with higher interest rates, and therefore, in theory, should support and prop up the value of the pound. Now, the problem was that before this, before 1992, the UK was already heading into an economic downturn. You saw economic growth slowing, and it seemed as if the country was going to enter a recession. Now, as a result, the government and the Bank of England raising interest rates only made this crisis worse and made it more likely that the UK would enter into a recession. So here we can see a prime example of the Bank of England sort of being weaponized for political gain, in this case, joining the euro, and thereby having detrimental effects on the rest of the economy. Now, as a result, New Labour, the sort of party that was born by Tony Blair and Gordon Brown in the late 1990s, decided to campaign on making the Bank of England independent. Now, of course, I talked about the first problem of frequently for decades and decades, the Bank of England's interest rates being manipulated before the election, but the exchange rate mechanism crisis, the ERM, the Black Wednesday crisis was the main tipping point, which resulted, in my opinion, in them including this in the election manifesto. And following their landslide election in 1997, Tony Blair's government fulfilled this promise and made the Bank of England independent. Now, this had a few key effects. Number one, of course, the government didn't have control over monetary policy, and therefore monetary policy could act independently and typically as a response to fiscal policy. So for example, if fiscal policy is too expansionary, maybe the government's initiated huge government spending, which is unfunded, or maybe huge tax cuts, then the Bank of England can now respond by tightening monetary policy, by doing the opposite response, in order to try and achieve macro stability. So with the Bank of England's independence came a few targets. For example, an explicit 2% inflation target, which is more implicitly targeting the core inflation. Core inflation being the inflation rate of the UK minus energy and foods. So this is really important, of course, because previously the governments would just weaponize the Bank of England for political purposes, and therefore inflation was quite unpredictable. I mentioned that in 1989, inflation was at 15%, but as a result of this independence, you had a lot more accountability, and the Bank of England could focus on this stability by reacting in the opposite way to what the government was doing if they were overstimulating the economy. Now, the same is true is if they are understimulating the economy. For example, after 2010, where very harsh spending cuts and austerity measures were introduced, the Bank of England acted in the opposite way and ended up cutting interest rates and enacting much more aggressive quantitative easing to try and combat the very deflationary policies, the very contractionary fiscal policies that were pursued by the coalition government at the time. So I think this is the key benefit of Bank of England independence, because you have, again, the government's not fully in control of monetary policy, it can react in accordance to what the government is doing. So making sure that you manage aggregate demand growth in the economy by achieving a 2% core inflation target, which is what they target. Now, at the same time, I think another key effect is moving the UK in line with most countries in the world. For example, the Federal Reserve has been independent really since its founding in the 1910s, and as a result has acted how the Bank of England acts today, in a sort of independent, reactionary way to what the government is doing. So the Federal Reserve is a good example. Also, the New Zealand Central Bank as well is a key example of a central bank which is independent, has these inflation targets, and therefore this promoted a lot of macro stability within New Zealand at the time. And as a result, making the Bank of England independent brought the UK in line with these countries and brought the same positive effects of stability and macro confidence that was really required in the UK following the crisis of Black Wednesday. So I think a really important takeaway from this is just looking at how successful or not successful the Bank of England has been at monitoring economic stability, particularly with regard to inflation and making sure unemployment is low since its independence in 1997. Now, I think the one thing that is very clear is that the economic boom that the UK experienced from 1997 to 2007 was in part due to the Bank of England. The fact that we had this newfound stability, this newfound credibility amongst international investors was a huge positive and resulted in the UK having the highest productivity growth in the G7 during this period, rapid economic growth, the expansion and creation of areas like Canary Wharf. I think is a tantamount in part due to the economic stability of both the Labour government, but also the Bank of England at the time. Now, inflation did stay quite low during this period. It started to tick up after 2005, but that was mainly due to external shocks, such as the huge rise in oil and commodity prices, which were driven mainly due to the Chinese economy booming, particularly in real estate, requiring a lot of these materials, of course. Now, following the financial crisis, you saw a very different macro picture, but inflation still has been around 2% over the period. It was slightly higher in 2010 and around 0% in 2015. But broadly speaking, inflation has been around the 2% target. And that definitely wasn't the case prior to the Bank of England's independence in 1997. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time.